Know the Source on One Radio Network.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone. Another day in paradise here in Dripping Springs, Texas, from our palatial studios high atop my kitchen. Oh, that's right. We've had about, after 50 days of plus 100 and no rain, we've had about 12 inches of rain in the last 3 weeks when we had this system pull in. The rain angels came on board, and so we're very grateful to the rain angels and whoever supplies all the rain. And the creeks are running, and walk outside my house, and we just have lots of flora and fauna. We don't do lawns and things here in the country. We just let it go. Well, enough about me. I hope you're doing well. Grab yourself a cup of joe or tea or smoothie or something, and pull up a chair and listen to our show this morning. Next hour, we're going to dig into some of the things going on in our bodies, potentially, and the four-legged bodies with these glyphosates thing, with Wayne Blakely, the Living Streams guy. He studies this stuff a lot, and it's really strange what's going on. And so the more we know about it, the more we can figure out how to fly under the radar as best we can and protect ourselves. And there's always a way on planet Earth, right? There's always a way, regardless of how silly it gets out there. There's always a way to protect ourselves and to overcome challenges. I mean, that's just the way it's set up. That's the way they do it. There's always a way. There's never a point, in my opinion, where we say, well, we just can't do anything. No, it's just not true. Of course, nobody listens to me because I'm bonkers, but whatever. Okay, so now the first hour, we're going to talk about medical marijuana. Back in the days, in the 70s, we called it wacky tobacco, but we've come a long way in the last 40 years of using hemp for medical purposes, and lots of interesting things in this regard going on. Dr. Sherry Yafai is here, and she's an MD, a classically trained emergency medical physician, and she's a member of the Society of Cannabis Clinicians and the lead for the projects for the UCLA Cannabis Initiative, showing the cannabis protocol will assist patients in maintaining long-term sobriety, too. So now they're getting into things like helping folks get off of alcohol and opioids and something, which is pretty cool. And she's High Society's Director of Research. High Society is a website that you can Google up there and learn more about them. And I had the website up and then I lost it. That's all right. I think it's highsociety.com. I'll pull it up and we'll tell you more about that, what they're doing. Yeah, it's highsociety.com. I have a great name, High Society, helping folks get off of all different kinds of things. So let's say hi to Dr. Yafai. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me this morning, Patrick.
Well, yes, it's our pleasure. And you in Los Angeles, thanks for getting up so early. It's only 7 in the morning there.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Do you still go in and do your emergency thing and do regular doctor stuff? Or are you more on research now?
No, I'm still going into the emergency department about a few times a month.
And you did that full on for a long time?
I've done that fully for the last decade, and over the last 6 months to a year, I've really slowed down.
Uh-huh. Must be.
But I've been working with cannabis now for about 2 years.
Uh-huh.
We recreationally legalized here in California in 2016. I kind of segued over to a different track.
Yeah. So what was it about the whole cannabis thing? Is it proper to say cannabis or hemp? Does it matter what we call it?
Good question. So cannabis is really the biological name we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Hemp is a specific type. So it's the part that is grown for its stalk. So the sturdiness of the stalk, the part that we can use to make paper, or we can make clothing out of. Whereas, you know, what's typically known as marijuana, which is what we're actually referring to as cannabis, is what was grown for the flower.
I see. So we've often heard that the founding fathers, and I think the Constitution was actually on hemp paper. I believe that's true. And they had hemp clothes and all kinds of things made out of hemp rope. And as you know now, you can get hemp shirts and stuff like that. I had a couple of hemp shirts early on, but I smoked it, you know, and I couldn't help myself. So why, what this interest, here you are classical, I mean, an MD in emergency medicine. What brought on your whole interest in cannabis?
Well, to be truthful, it was two very personal experiences. I had two family members with cancer at the time,
mm-hmm.
and both individuals were recommended by their oncologist to use marijuana or pot products, and neither of them knew what to do. One was a 40-something-year-old woman, and one was a 70-year-old man. And the 40-year-old woman had a little bit of an easier time figuring it out and was a little bit more open to figuring it out,
mm-hmm.
using different types, whereas the 70-year-old man took a piece of someone else's cannabis cookie and essentially had a very bad reaction to it and ended up in bed for 2 days and didn't want to get out of bed, felt so weak and dizzy that he just swore it off from then on. And he unfortunately only had a few more months to live and didn't do well with pain management, didn't do well at the end of his life. And I thought to myself, well, if we've known, which we have here in California, since 96, it has been medically legalized. And in fact, oncology or cancer is one of the primary indications for use, and it always has been. Why is it that we're not acknowledging this and putting forth a better foot for our patients,
mm-hmm.
when they are in the worst possible scenarios of their lives, when they have the most difficulty, the most pain, the most nausea, the most discomfort? Why are we not doing this better for them?
Mm.
Which was what led me down this path.
I see. And High Sobriety, where you're director of research, this is more geared towards helping folks to get off of alcohol, opioids, pain meds, and those kinds of things, rather than the medical use per se?
Well, yes and no.
Or both.
Yes. So High Sobriety was designed as a sober living facility for individuals who are trying to get off or maintain their sobriety. And the concept behind it was not quite medical. You're right. So the concept was, well, this is less harmful than what everybody else is abusing, so why not use that way? And the concept to me when I first started was, well, you're just swapping one drug for another drug. This is nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about a year before I got on board with High Sobriety. And I went and worked with cannabis for quite a while before I got involved with them. And the more I worked with cannabis, the more I realized that I can decrease patients' narcotic use. Just as a matter of fact, when patients are using cannabis. So that was kind of stuck in the back of my mind. And then I was listening to a speaker talk about, well, this is a harm reduction model.
It's a what?
Harm reduction.
Harm reduction.
The concept is, you know, back in the 90s, we started using needle exchange programs for heroin addicts, where we provided them a safe space where they could get clean needles. And that clean needle concept was met with a lot of anger, frustration, opposition from a lot of individuals because they said, well, we're just encouraging people to use heroin this way. And we proved that wasn't true. We're just allowing people who are going to use heroin anyways to not contract HIV, hepatitis, other blood-borne diseases. And in that way, have them at least not get a secondary issue or a tertiary issue out of this. Mm-hmm. And we found that this is a good harm reduction model. Now, taking that back to cannabis, the concept is if you're going to use a drug or if you're going to misuse a drug, it might as well be something that you're not going to die from. And we know that cannabis is, we don't have a lethal dosage yet for what is going to be an overdose, or a lethal overdose, I should say. And the reason I say it that way is because we know that in hundreds of years that cannabis has been around, there has been no single isolated overdose that has caused anyone to die.
Yeah. Okay.
We're going to take it one step further. So we're going to kind of mold this model of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And when we started talking about it in that light, it seemed to make a lot more sense. Prior to 2018, they had already opened up High Sobriety, and what I walked into was a group of kids who were using or smoking as much marijuana as they wanted. And, you know, again, with the harm reduction model in mind, I didn't quite like it. They weren't quite happy with it. We needed to make a change. So after 2018, we changed that model and made it a dosed model, meaning that it was something where each individual became required to see a cannabis clinician. That would be me. And we worked out a plan for their cannabis use. So it was no longer allowed to be smoked. So that was a big change in 2018. There's no smoking on campus. And number two, they have to go through and meet with a doctor and decide what that protocol is going to look like for the individual. Because we have to remember, at the end of the day, it's not all the same. People abuse different things because
Different reasons.
Has a different need.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So those individuals who are abusing alcohol don't have the same needs as somebody who's abusing heroin, for example. And so what we do now is we really modify and personalize that plan to what their needs are. And so now it's dosed. So, for example, you can have a dose of, you know, one spray of 4-to-1 cannabis, which is a CBD dominant during the day, and you can get a piece of a THC edible at night for sleep. Two very distinctly different things.
Yeah.
It would be akin to me saying you get Tylenol during the day, Ambien at night to sleep. It's the same concept. So the goal is to have individuals who can be able to interact and engage in therapy during the day and get a good night's sleep at night. That's the goal.
Or they could feel stronger, maybe healthier, or just more stable so they could work out the emotional, spiritual issue, which I would argue is at the root of all of it.
Precisely. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, good. Oh, I got lucky. Okay. Wow. That's pretty interesting. So somehow you managed to take off your judgment model of well, these people are just, you know, whatever. They're still hooked on something. So, and then get over that and use it as a tool, as a bridge.
Correct. That's one idea. And then as I got a little bit further into it and did a little bit more investigation of, well, how do these kids plan on doing it anyways, let's say without cannabis?
Right.
And what do we do in the medical world and in addiction? We use Suboxone.
I'm sorry? We use what?
We use Suboxone, which is, or methadone is another name.
Oh, methadone.
Right? So we are using another version of a narcotic to get people off of narcotics. So when you step back and you take a bigger look as to what the world of addiction and the world of medicine and rehab is using anyways, mm-hmm. you do realize, well, we do use one drug to get somebody else off another drug. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have people who stand in line every month at the methadone clinic to get their methadone because they're off of heroin. I would argue it's not better. It's really not better. It's a pill form, and it's legalized, and it's monitored, but that doesn't mean that you're any less addicted.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that. So methadone is similar to heroin, and is it on the street being sold in the black market as and pill form, which is a lot easier to do than the needle thing?
I mean, no, not quite.
It's harder to get a hold of?
It's just not as good a high.
I see.
And that's why it's used for rehab.
Rehab, I see.
Because the high is not as good.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can get something where the high is better, i.e. heroin, crushed up Percocet, Oxy, I mean, those are, the high is better. So methadone, the high is not as good. But yeah. I just argue that it's not about the high, it's about the addiction, it's about the maintenance. It's about the fact that you can't skip your dose. And that's the part to me that seems like the slippery slope. You can skip your dose of cannabis, nothing's going to happen. You can't skip your dose of methadone.
Uh-huh. Dr. Sherry Yafai, MD, and we're talking about medical marijuana cannabis. If you care to join us, 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. So overall, when did California do the recreational legalization?
The recreational passed in 2016. It was enacted in 2018. So it actually went into place with the Bureau of Cannabis Control kind of monitoring in the background in January of 2018. And over the past, what are we looking at, 10 months now?
Mm-hmm.
Over the past 10 months, the Bureau has done is doing a good job of putting into place all of these different rules and regulations and monitoring things. Some of the monitoring programs have been things like, making sure that we have safety caps on our products so that kids can't get into it. We have changed the look of a lot of the edibles so they don't look like things that kids would want to eat. For example, gummy bears. Gummy bears was a big problem because kids and, quite frankly, anybody looks at a gummy bear, they don't think there's cannabis products in it. And so what the rules and requirements required was that change into any products that don't look like children's food items.
Yeah, yeah. The Colorado thing, has that been, been in effect longer, recreational?
Yeah, Colorado was the first to recreationally legalize.
And when was that?
I believe they were...
Sometime last year,
2014,
huh?
Or 2015, longer than us, about 2014.
Huh. Any kind of stats on any problems with it that you have seen or?
Yes. So one of the reasons for the pediatric issue was because in Colorado they were showing, especially out of their emergency department, there was a larger number of pediatric as well as elderly. So, we're looking at age over 65 and age under 20. In fact, usually it was even, I believe they were looking at age under 10. That there was more overdoses. And so what ends up happening with recreational rules is that you really can't, once a purchase is made and taken into the home, you can't control
overdose. Right.
And it's something we've seen even here in California is that our adult parents of adult parents, I should say, so, people in their 80s, 90s, et cetera, see a piece of chocolate lying around the house, and they eat the chocolate. And then about 2 to 3 hours after their ingestion, they start feeling unwell.
Yeah.
And then they land in the emergency department. In that age, one of the things we worry about when patients come into the emergency department is stroke. And so when people come in feeling like they are not balanced, when they feel like this happened quickly or all of a sudden, because it probably hit them all of a sudden, we get more and more worried about things like stroke, and we can spend, thousands and thousands of dollars going through the process of making sure this isn't a stroke. So that was a big problem in both Colorado, I'm sure, as California as well, based on what we're seeing in Los Angeles. Other problems and concerns, some of the big ones, the obvious ones, are driving.
Yeah.
People driving under the influence, that's something that we're always concerned and watchful about. We never want somebody to drive under the influence of anything. The judge is not in yet. The verdict is not in yet on how that's going to be measured out or how that's going to play out.
Yeah.
So we still have a lot of questions on that. But, of course, we don't want anybody driving under the influence.
Right. On the older ones of 70, you could understand 70 or 80 of somebody just getting an edible for the first time and getting whacked, you know, getting stoned. Probably they would be fine if they knew what was going on. But I suspect I'm just theorizing here that they would get anxious and, you know, paranoid perhaps or whatever, because what this drug can do to the mind, you know.
Right.
So that's probably the problem that people would go in and with anxiety, they could then be affecting their heart and all kinds of stuff.
Correct. Well, I will take it one step further and say that the dosages that are in an edible is very different from if you were just going to smoke something.
Sure.
At the end of the day, you're looking at something that has a huge milligram dosing compared to, you know, like wacky tobacco. If you were smoking that,
you're
getting like a milligram or two of THC, which is that active ingredient we're looking at. Whereas in a brownie or in a piece of chocolate, it's 100 milligrams. You're taking 100 times the dose in one setting.
Wait a minute. You said 80 milligrams or 100 milligrams.
So in a piece of chocolate,
okay.
So the technicalities are, for recreational laws, I believe, should be the maximum is 100 milligrams.
Okay.
A full chocolate.
Okay.
So whereas if you were going to smoke something, you would get maybe a milligram or two.
Oh, I thought you said 80 milligrams. 1 milligram.
Oh, no.
Wow.
One single milligram or two.
So if you smoke a joint, you're getting 1 milligram of THC, and if you eat a piece of chocolate, it's 100 milligrams?
That's roughly. So
pretty
in
close.
A whole joint.
Wow.
In a whole joint, it's different, but in like a smoke or two, so if you were going to take just a single inhalation or two inhalations.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at roughly 2 milligrams.
Wow.
Whereas in a whole brownie or chocolate, you're looking at 100 milligrams.
Yeah, it's
and people forget that this is something that we can dose. And they're like, well, it's all the same, and a little good is good, and a lot is better. That's not true. That's not true at all. And so 100 milligrams is not just going to leave you a little stoned. It is going to make you vomit. It's going to make you feel like your life is ending.
Yeah.
It's going to make you feel awful.
Yeah.
And it's...
Stay right there. Can we do a break? Can we do a little break?
Yeah.
Stay right there. Dr. Sherry Yaffe, very interesting. We're learning a lot. So we have a lot to talk about between now and 10 o'clock. And we'll talk about glyphosates after that. So come on in with a question or comment. I'm sure you have some. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I encourage you to give this PearlSim product a try. I'm just loving it. And Wayne Blakely, he's going to be here in half an hour. He's the fellow that introduced me to Dr. Ruolin Xu. I remember the day he told me about it. He said, you should really check out this Chinese lady that she's got this product that's really pretty cool. And it's a pearl that she's kind of figured out how to powder up without messing up with the cellular matrix of it and the whole structure of it, the energy. And it's real pearl. It's not mother pearl or something silly like that, some stuff you can get on eBay, but it's the real deal, and that's important. And pearl has been used for millennia in Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, for essentially beauty and strength. But beauty is the number one thing, and you people take it internally. I've taken pearl in Ayurvedic formulas, and also pearl is in a lot of the formulas for skin and hair in Ayurveda, and just made the connection after learning more about her product. So it's a classical kind of a thing for hair, skin, and nails. And people, I would recommend that you just click on the ad on the front page, and you'll get to the two containers, and you get a nice discount, and it's a very good buy. You'll get two of them. You could put one in your bathroom and one out where your supplements are. Take it internally. You can put it in face cream, put it on your face, and then the bomb is when you brush your teeth with it. It's just the best thing ever, and I'm really picky about my toothpaste. You know all the research we've done on teeth. It's the best thing ever that I've ever used on my teeth to clean, to sparkle, to shine. And actually, it feels like it's, and she said it does, Dr. Xu, the last time we talked to her, it's actually filling in little bitty indentations, because the tooth is actually a bone, and this calcium mineral product, it's just not calcium, actually has been proven scientifically to help the bone to grow. And the teeth are a bone, make no mistake about it, and it hardens it like I'm doing all mine too. And then that's what makes it shiny. The light shines through. So it's not like a white thing that people use with the bleaching, which we don't recommend, or even the chalk that's in all toothpaste. That actually scratches the surface. It'll make it a little bit whiter, but this is more of a pearl look rather than white, much more natural. You know, not like the Hollywood kind of pearl, because they just bleach them pretty much. But I could set up a shop out in Hollywood and make $1 billion with this stuff. Anyway, it's called Pearl Seam. It's right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Check it out. Read some of the testimonials. Get yourself a couple and then let me know how you like it.
Starving for vitality, we're turning to energy drinks, stimulants, and pharmaceuticals to try to improve our focus, increase our metabolism, rescue our sex drive, and adapt to the stresses of modern-day living. Each year, an elk sheds its impressive antlers, regenerating an even larger set the following year. These velvet antlers have been a revered traditional medicine for thousands of years. Elk Antler harnesses the adaptogenic and highly regenerative growth factors from this natural and ethical resource into a concentrated, bioavailable extraction. Its revitalizing effects span bone, muscle, and nerve support, improve metabolism, cellular repair, sexual potency, anti-inflammation, vascular strengthening, and hormone production. Humanely harvested from free-range U.S. elk, extracted in organic alcohol and protected in Miron glass, our elk antler is available in 3 strengths to restore your vitality at any level.
Boy, this elk antler is really nice. You can pair up with the elk with a pine pollen. And keep in mind, I think for another week or so, stick to the 15th, you can look at the Shaga and the Rishi. I'm clicking on the ad here. Let's see if it's back in stock. Man, they sold out quickly. Sir Thrival Shaga Rishi on the front page of our website, and it goes right to, yeah, they're back in stock, Rishi and Shaga, and the sale price is right in there. You don't need the, I'm going to get me a couple, about one of each. Boy, yeah, medicinal mushrooms, boy, these are really, you know, in the future, I think 20 years from now, we'll probably still be doing medicinal mushrooms when nothing else. These are magical beans, these mushrooms. So Shaga and Rishi on sale right now. Any Sir Thrival link on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
We're talking with Dr. Sherry Yaffe, and she's an MD out of Los Angeles, Director of Research Development for High Sobriety, highsobriety.com. Talking about medical marijuana, also known as cannabis. So, I'm really curious. When people are taking medical marijuana, either smoking or the edibles, for cancer or whatever, is this herb doing anything other than making them more comfortable? You know, just with pain, or is it really doing something physiologically that's helping the body to heal?
Right now, we're starting to look at it from that perspective because for so long we've been unable to study it. We've had a lot of strict rules and regulations. There have been a limited number of topics that we could study. And so what we're seeing now, especially out of places like Israel and Spain, is this newfound concept that let's look at it from a healing point of view. There are studies starting to seep out now, and there's 2 big labs, one in Israel and one in Spain, that does discuss the healing properties specifically in cancer. You know, we're not at a place to say yet with gusto here in the States that this is going to be a treatment for cancer, but I have hopes, and we've seen reports here and there sporadically that it's been the only thing that individuals have used and have had sporadic resolution in cancer treatments. Again, it's really hard to say, and part of the reason I like to educate people about why it's such a challenge is that cancer is not just one thing. You know, you don't just get cancer and get one type of treatment. There's hundreds of different types of cancer. And the same In the same respect, there are hundreds of different types of cannabis. And so that's the second kind of moving piece to all of this. All cannabis is not made equally. And that's part of the beauty of the plant, is that it's a plant. And there's genetic drift based on the sun, the soil exposure, the amount of rain it's getting. And that's what's given us so much variety, which has been why we can use it for things like epilepsy. You know, you talk about what are the other medical indications. Epidiolex is a big pharmaceutical manufactured CBD only, that means non-psychoactive, drug that just came out on the market this past week. It just got descheduled by the DEA. So it is going to be widely available throughout the United States in 6 weeks to allow patients with severe aggressive seizure disorders to try using it.
What's the name?
It's called Epidiolex, Epidiolex.
I spell it again,
Epidiolex.
This is a med prescription?
This is this is going to be sold through pharmacies.
How is it different from some of the CBD oils out there? This probably not from very different.
Per their website and their research, the one thing they can differentiate is just that they are pharmaceutical
That's
grade.
That's a pharmaceutical grade, yeah. Which, to be fair, that really doesn't mean much. But,
I understand. Have no opinion on the matter.
I understand. Yeah, you know that. So generally, the CBD, as I understand it, can be sold if it's is it 0.03 THC, Doc?
Correct. So close. So 0.3%. So if it's less than 0.3% THC, that is, and it's, so it's 99.7% CBD.
I see.
That is what differentiates, we were talking earlier about what differentiates hemp from, you know, typical cannabis or marijuana. And that is one of the major distinctions. So how much of the chemical is within the flower of the plant or within, you know, the seed or the leaves or the, you know, wherever they're harvesting it from.
So do you think we're on going down some kind of a potential black hole with focusing on the CBD thing? I've tried quite a few of them. I mean, I don't have anything. I'm very blessed with good health, but I've tried quite a few of them and never really, I don't know, I just, not much went on. I didn't feel any like benefit to keep taking it. But you know, in my case, this is kind of anecdotal, but you might find it interesting. In the ones that see, when we start talking about them, companies were sending me stuff, right? Their CBD. Say, well, here, take this, try it. And you know, in virtually every case, if I took a pretty good hit of it, I actually felt euphoria.
A little hot.
Yeah, I got a little whacked on it. And I said, well, how's that possible with 0.3%? But then
it's possible because they're not
heated,
advertising
right?
with that. Well, no, well, the problem with stuff you get over the internet right now, especially in the world of hemp, is that it's unregulated.
Right.
So what they say is on the bottle may not be what's
in it. I see. It doesn't have to be 0.3.
Correct. That's absolutely right. And I believe there was a study that was put out where they actually went and obtained a number of these things and found that, in fact, that's not what was in the bottle, what was advertised to be.
So a lot of the CBD now is just... it's just kind of like the Wild West.
Correct. So number one, you have to be really cautious where you're getting medication from, right? Just like you are with everything else. Number two, once you're cautious about where you're getting it from, I always tell people it's not a vitamin. It's not like everybody needs this vitamin in their system. You do, in fact, produce this independently in your body or something very similar called anatomides. And we know about these things, but, you know, if you're not deficient or if you don't seem to have a problem with this particular molecule, it's not going to be helpful to you.
Yeah, why take it? So we have these cannabinoid receptors. So we're kind of built to get these feeling of good relaxation and feeling innate in our body.
Correct.
So the CBD in general, what do you think long term? What's going to be, used for? Does it have different healing kind of potential than the THC?
Yes. So that's where, you know, we go down this Epidiolex route and, you know, other reasons to use CBD. So in general, you know, seizure disorder is very rare and it's not common. It's probably not what most of the people listening into are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Things like pain, right? So just very simple pain, low back pain, muscle pain in particular, I find CBD to be helpful. Now, that being said, you know, there's no great studies on CBD alone except in seizures. And the reason for that is because up until very recently, nobody was interested in CBD. That was not the active part of the plant that people were sourcing after, right? Only now that it's become very widely accepted, kind of without legs, you know, mm-hmm. It's become very widely accepted because it's become so helpful and because so many people are seeing such benefit out of it. And mm-hmm. because it's not psychoactive, meaning that CBD itself, if you're given a correct medication, should not get you high in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, if you're just getting 0.3.
Correct. There's no way. Yeah. I never say never anyway, but there should be very, very, very few possibilities of that happening.
Is it true, though, that the THC needs to be heated in some way to activate the psychoactive effects?
Specific types of THC, so THCA, if you see an A in the back part of it, needs to be heated to be activated. Not all THC is built that way. Just like THC is not equal to CBD, THC is not equal to THCA. It seems to be like the precursor to THC. So a lot of plants grow just THCA, and that's why people find that they're not getting high off of that product when they're ingesting it versus when they're smoking.
Overall, say someone in a legal state, California or wherever, has some really difficult arthritic pain, fibromyalgia, I don't know, just pick your sciatica or something, and they eat an edible with a huge dose. Do they generally, does it help with that pain, or do they just get whacked and don't care?
Well, that's a great question.
It's probably the same thing. I don't know.
Well, you know.
In a way it is.
It depends on what it is. Number one, with things like peripheral neuropathy, sciatica qualifies. It's a nerve root pain. There's a study out of UC San Diego in the last few years where they looked at peripheral neuropathy, but they looked specifically at smoking THC with peripheral neuropathy, and they found that they had a decrease in pain. It was a very specific look and a very specific outcome. Peripheral neuropathy for me in my office practice is inevitably a challenge because depending on the type of pain patients are having, we find that they do or don't benefit. It's about, I would guess, on par based off of the CSD study with classic pharmaceuticals, so things like Neurontin, Gabapentin, Lyrica. They're about 35 to 40% effective, and I find this hits about that same range, mm-hmm. about, you know, at most 40-45% effective in my office practice where we're dealing with the same. But that is very specific to THC combinations. So I have people come in who say, oh, I've already been taking CBD, it's not working,
mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't seem to be the CBD that's as effective on the peripheral neuropathy.
Mm-hmm.
That's just out of my office practice that I've seen. That's not a study that's been done.
Sure. Is it fair to say, though, with the edibles or the smoking, that are we looking at just symptomatic relief and maybe it's affecting the pain receptors rather than, or do we know if it's actually kind of getting to some of the cause of it? Is that still unknown?
In muscle pain, I find that even topical use, so even if you've got like a sore muscle, you went and did a hard workout,
mm-hmm.
and you're a little bit sore than what you'd like, and you use a topical cream, that what we're seeing there is that it, you know, you use it once or twice and it's gone.
Hmm.
Was it going to be gone anyways? I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it helping speed up that process? I can't tell you for sure, but I can tell you that you don't need to, instead of taking, you know, six Motrin and being done with it, we don't find that it's the same thing. You know, I have people come in with neck strains, and they've been popping pills, and it's not working, or it's not helping, or it's mildly effective at best, whereas they use this as a topical fashion, and the pain is gone.
It could just be a matter of so simple where it's just helping the person relax and the muscles relax.
Correct. Kind of like a muscle relaxer.
Yeah, kind of like a muscle relaxer, right?
Exactly, except not having the same sedation as a muscle relaxer, not having the same constipation effects.
Yeah.
So the side effect profile is, to me, better.
Is constipation a side effect of THC?
No. I shouldn't say that. It tends to dehydrate you.
Ah.
So it tends to, if you're constipated because of dehydration, that tends to get exacerbated. Mm-hmm. If you don't have problems with constipation, it doesn't tend at low doses to cause constipation in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But yes, it does tend to be very dehydrating.
Bruce wants to know, please ask your guest if there are contraindications of taking edible or smoking a joint for pain with other pharmaceuticals people could be taking, like high blood pressure or statins and the common usual suspects?
Good question. So there's two absolute no-nos. So one is if you have a transplant and you're on immunosuppressants for your transplant, that is an absolute contraindication to CBD. The second contraindication, absolute, is schizophrenia or history of hallucinations. And that's because this can, we don't understand it well enough, and there's too much risk, because you don't want to be garner a new diagnosis of schizophrenia because you smoked pot. That's just a no-brainer, so to speak. Relative contraindications with medications, things like Coumadin, I'm very careful of, because it gets metabolized the same way that cannabis is metabolized through the liver. There's certain antacids that you also have to be more cautious about. They just might not be as effective. Otherwise, blood pressure medication, you need to monitor your blood pressure more closely when you start using. The body tends to adapt to it, but it can drop your blood pressure.
Oh, really?
And then, yes, because you do have receptors on your blood vessels. Those are kind of the ones at the forefront of my brain.
Yeah. Any effect on the immune system modulation, autoimmune issues that you're seeing in research?
So one of the reasons that cannabis was approved from a medical perspective in 96 in California was for treatment as an adjunct, meaning to help with other treatments for things like IBS, IBD, Crohn's, colitis, which are autoimmune regulated functions of the GI tract. So there seems to be some help. I can't tell you if it's helping fix it or if it's just helping with the symptoms.
Yeah.
It's very unclear, and I think that's going to clear up more as the years progress, especially as now we're looking at different bills going through the Senate and the House with being able to do more research on more different types of cannabis, because that's really important.
Isn't there a bill going through now or trying to make its way through, a Medical Cannabis Research Act?
That's right. It's trying to make its way through, but I think there's other things going on.
You think?
that are taking up everybody's attention.
I got to keep these guys busy for a couple more years the way they're going.
I would wish it would take them that time, but they're going to push through this.
Rock and roll. Medical Cannabis Research Act. So this would be an idea. I think it's Representative Matt Gaetz out of Florida. They want to do some kind of act so the gov would get involved with issue more licenses to grow marijuana and stuff like that and to test it.
It's not just the growing. It's the growing specifically for research. So right now, research is mostly deriving their cannabis that they're using for testing purposes through a single university, Ole Miss, in Mississippi. And they are... that's where all their products are coming from. So this is to design so that there we can get a bigger number of products and not have to jump through so many hoops, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So here's an email for you. Does your guest think that Big Pharma has kept cannabis suppressed until they could come out with their own patented stuff?
Likely, yes.
Likely, yes, yeah. Well, you're a doc. You're in the belly of the beast.
It.
You would know. What do you mean? Tell us what's been going on.
Well, they already have a synthetic THC on the market called Marinol. Marinol's been widely available for years. It's what we use in the hospital so that patients can get a THC equivalent. It's not very popular, to be quite honest, because it doesn't seem to be very good.
Huh.
The plant is much better. The natural plant is much better, and people do much better with it. But that just goes to speak to, you know, I say this very frequently, why muck with what we've got when we know what we've got is pretty darn good?
Sure. So this other one you mentioned...
And then Epidiolex.
Say it again?
Epidiolex.
Epidiolex. Is this the real deal, or is this made in a lab as well?
So this is more along the lines of the real deal.
Okay.
So GW Pharma has recognized that there is a great potential here, and they have monetized on it.
Why not? Yeah. Right. And I suspect it's a pretty smart move because there's a lot of people in our culture, you can understand, that they're not going to take anything unless their doctor gives it to them, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And the same way for the physicians.
Sure.
You know,
they don't want to give it.
I'm not ignorant to that. I'm going to be lecturing later today to a group of doctors about this, these issues, exactly because we need to acknowledge that our education should not just be in the hands of pharmaceutical companies, and that this is one step forward into getting everybody to understand. So I do appreciate what the companies have done in making it more well-recognized and better studied and spending the time and the energy and the money doing all of that, and, you know, I hope that they get reimbursed for their efforts, but at the end of the day, yes, this will make it more popularized and more available to people who need it, and that's what's important. And at the end of the day, that's all we can ask for.
Here's an email from Kira for Dr. Yaffe. Can you please ask the doctor, what is the best ratio of THC to CBD in an oil tincture to take for sleep, specifically for sleep maintenance?
Good question. So I often actually tell people not to take any CBD for sleep. I find it's very awakening. It's very alerting. Unless there are some pain issues that are causing people not to sleep, which can occur, it tends to give people poor dreams and difficulty, a little bit more of a challenge with sleep. So I actually recommend doing a very, 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 very small dose of THC only for sleep.
Do we know what mechanism that works on? Any idea? Do we know why that works better?
I tell people it works like it's like a dimmer switch for your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at night when everything is quiet and you have time to sit with your own brain, sometimes that's when your brain talks to you the loudest.
Sure.
All of the issues of the day kind of come up, and it makes it really hard for a lot of people to sleep. I mean, that's why Ambien and Lunesta are huge, huge, huge big sellers, because a lot of people have issues with sleep.
Of course, so that's why people are awake, because their mind-brain thing is just, you know, having a party, right?
Right, exactly. So whereas you want to kind of turn off all the...
The noise.
All the nonsense and the noise of the day.
Mm-hmm.
What I find that the THC does is it helps you turn it off.
Is that right? Really? Because I can recall years ago when I first smoked marijuana, I think about 75, to me it was like, it almost like it enhanced my awareness of my inner world.
Right.
And thoughts, you know, and feelings. So that's kind of opposite what you just said, though, really? Maybe
right.
It's because you're doing more. Maybe
well,
because we did more.
There's twofold of that.
Okay.
So number one, it does. It can do that. But remember, you were using a particular strain.
Oh, who knows what it was? Yeah, who knew?
Right, who knows what it was? And there are strains now that are kind of designed to put you to sleep, which, you know, I would I would say is akin to the whole idea of, you know, when pot smokers talk pot, they talk about being couch locked. Right?
Couch what? Couch what?
Couch locked, meaning that they're locked into their couch. It just makes them so sedate.
Right.
We're looking at not just the THC aspect, but if you look a little closer, there's things like linalool and limonene, things that will tend to have very relaxing properties. That are in citrus fruit. So these are the essential oils of citrus fruit that help kind of relax the body. So that's kind of my general part one. And then part two is that if you're really looking to maintain sleep, the benefit of the oils is that it doesn't kick in right away. So if you can already fall asleep on your own, you're asleep when it kicks in. So it continues to just keep that switch dimmed.
What do you mean oils?
So cannabis comes in hundreds of different varieties. So you can smoke it, you can vape it, you can vape or smoke an oil, you can ingest it, and the way you can ingest it is you can ingest it by ingesting natural flower. You can ingest the oil products of the natural flower. You can take those oil products or flower itself and mix it into food. You can ingest food items like we talked about earlier. You can actually, they're making it in fabulous new ways every time I turn around. You can use it as a suppository or a vaginal suppository. You can use it as a cream or an ointment.
Wow.
So there are so many different ways you can use it. But again, something we haven't really spoken about in much detail, is not everyone is a responder. Kind of like what you had mentioned had happened for yourself. And it has to do with what you're going through, number one. And number two, if you've got those receptors in the right places, not everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's going to respond to it the same.
Yeah, and I think some people are just more sensitive to everything. I'm very, very aware of my inner world every second of my life. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So stuff just enhances it. I have to be careful. Only have coffee once a week. I get whacked on that, you know.
Right.
So,
right, exactly.
So it's really unique, isn't it, for it just depend on each people. So what's the all-time strain for sleep? Is there like the number one guy?
Because I don't usually recommend people smoke in general.
Right.
Most of my patients don't come in because they want to smoke. And because we don't use smokables at high sobriety, we only use edibles and oils and topicals.
So if you were going to do an oil.
There's no strain, right? There's no strain.
Oh, there isn't.
And in fact, even if I was going to tell you something I use out here product-wise, you can't get it there in Texas because we can't cross federal lines. So state lines, sorry.
Right.
So there's no shipping of products across state lines.
Right. But if somebody lived out there,
we
have a lot of listeners in California, if they wanted to get an oil for sleep, what would they look for?
You could look for that. You know, most of these things now, they do a really good job with writing what, if it's for sleep.
Okay.
So in the state of New York, they have, I think if you look up some of their products, they literally write like happy, aroused, calm, and sleep.
I'll be done.
So there's, you know, the industry itself has really understood that so nicely, and they designate that on a lot of their products.
They know. So if somebody out in California, New York, or listening, or would they put the milligrams on the oils if you did?
Yes, they put the milligrams on the oils. It's part of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what I suggest to people is to start low and go slow.
Yeah.
Do not start at the highest dosage you've ever taken. Do not try and convert one dosage to another because people don't do it very well, quite honestly. And if you want to convert in that way, I would really sit and go through it with a physician or with somebody at the dispensaries because they can sometimes take a better look at that and convert the dosing at that point. But in general, I would just start at the lowest possible. Start with one drop of oil and move up from there if you're going to do this independently.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's really interesting work you're doing and good stuff. So your website is highsobriety.com, right?
Correct.
Highsobriety.com. But the big picture here, let's talk philosophically for a few minutes before you go. Big picture, I mean, can it not be argued, I don't want to become like a stick in the mud here, but anything that we use as humans to, I don't know, that helps us to feel a little bit better or happier, whether it be coffee or, I don't know, goji berries or anything, we can get addicted to.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
I mean, I know my experience was 40 years ago, first time I did wacky tobacco, I said, whoa, I think I smoked it probably every day for 5 years. So I was definitely addicted to it. I was addicted to the experience.
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have to, I mean, that's just the way of the world, right?
Right. Which is why I always suggest people do this alongside with a physician or a clinician, because there is an addiction potential.
Sure.
It's one of the reasons why we don't allow smokables in the high sobriety facility. It's one of the reasons why... you know, you have to be careful and cautious. Patients, we had talked about contraindications. One of the other contraindications to THC in general is sobriety, in general, because of that exact addiction potential and the potential for it to, you know, we used to talk about it as being the, you know, the gateway drug, and I don't really talk about it in that sense anymore. We usually talk about it now as the exit drug. But you have to use it with caution. You're absolutely right. You have a potential for addiction. The addiction is not as dangerous, per se, as heroin, alcohol, nicotine. But it's there and it exists. And it would be silly to think otherwise. And it would be irresponsible to advertise otherwise.
I don't know if this is true, but it seems that perhaps cannabis is more of a... mental, spiritual, kind of emotional addiction rather than physical, but I'm not sure. Is that close, do you think?
It's close. It is close. There are some physical dependencies that we see with it, or withdrawals, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So sleep happens to be one of them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, over the years I've met people who use it primarily for sleep, and once they stop using it, then sleep becomes a problem.
Oh.
Now, you know, I can't really say. I can't say this is better or worse than other drugs that we use for sleep. So, for example, we use Ambien, I mentioned earlier, and Lunesta are two big pharmaceutical medications we use for sleep. You know, at the end of the day, people who have sleep issues and sleep disorders, it may be something they have to deal with for life, and they are going to take something. So the question becomes, what's better? You know, is it better to become dependent on a cannabis product for sleep? Is it better to become dependent on Ambien or Lunesta? I don't know. I really don't. We're seeing studies now that says Ambien is going to lead to early onset dementia. Are we going to see the same thing for cannabis? Maybe. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not an automatic go-to for me. Mm. Or I should say it's not done without any thought or insight into that problem.
Jasmine wants to know if you have any, where you can get more information about the cutting edge research on function of the liver on how glutathione is involved. You had mentioned curcumin through the liver. Do you understand her question? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm going to try and piece it together.
Okay.
So she's asking specifically about the metabolism through the liver.
Right.
So it does. It does get metabolized through the cytochrome P450 pathway. We do know a lot of medications that are metabolized through that pathway. So one of the medications I mentioned earlier, I didn't mention the actual name, tacrolimus, is one of the immunosuppressant medications we use in transplants. That is specifically metabolized through the same pathway, and we know this because we can measure tacrolimus levels. So what we're seeing is in things that we can measure levels of, that it is interfering with those levels, and that's of utmost importance because you don't want your, you know, transplanted body part, kidney, for example, to get rejected.
Yeah. Final question. Our second guest is waiting in the wings, but this is important. Somebody wants to know of how it's specifically used in alcoholism. We didn't really get to that. Now, alcoholism is an interesting thing because I suspect there's a lot of blood sugar issues going on, some real physical dependency to it, and candida. Right, and all kinds of things happening. How are you using cannabis then to help people get off the demon room?
That is a very long conversation.
Is it really? Okay, give us a short version. Just give us a short
version. The short version is the idea of cutting back. So alcohol, removal or withdrawal is going to be something that you can't do alone, first and foremost. Can't do it alone. I highly suggest getting either into a detox program or a if you're going to try and manage to do it on your own, get a physician, get in the care of a physician, get into AA, get into a program that speaks to you. AA is not the only program. Sure. It's probably just the most common one. But you need to do this with somebody. Alcohol dependence and withdrawal, in fact, is deadly. So please, please, I cannot urge you enough to do this with someone. And that's the 2 second, because cannabis is just a assisted pathway. It is not the only part of it. In fact, it's not the most important part. The most important part is that you do this with somebody.
Yeah, get some good advice. Well, Doc, it's been a pleasure. HighSobriety.com. HighSobriety.com, Dr. Sherry Yaffe. And I appreciate you getting up early there in California. And take care of yourself.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.